Okay, so yesterday we began this wonderful parak with this fascinating sugya that tells us that there is an issue with eating on Erev Pesach, and we'll say it vaguely like that because we don't know exactly what the parameters are, how absolute it is, when exactly it starts, what does it cover, but there's an issue that's enough of a vague way to put it on the table that Erev Pesach, there is some holding back that we should do for meeting. And we tried to figure out what's the reason for that. What's the purpose of prohibiting eating? And we saw a few tantalizing clues, but things that we still need to understand a little better, that we saw the view of Rashi and the Rashbam, that it's somehow connected to a hiddur mitzvah, that because your appetite will be greater, you'll have more te'ovon, so that is considered some kind of a glorification of the mitzvah, which was interesting on a whole lot of levels. Interesting because as far as hiddur mitzvah is concerned, it's not obvious that hiddur mitzvah extends to how you do things. We know that hiddur mitzvah means you should have beautiful mitzvah objects. But when something is not about how an item looks, it's about how you're doing something. So that's not obviously a point of hiddur mitzvah. So for Rashi and the Rashbam to tell us that, it was interesting. And what's also noteworthy is that other Rishonim, such as the Ran and Rabbeinu David, disagree, especially because the Gemara sounds like it gives a different reason. The Gemara on Daf Kuf Zayin seems to focus on the concern of Achila Gasa, that if you're too full going into Pesach, that's going to affect the mitzvah of matzah. So how's it going to affect it? Does it mean that you're going to be so full that you just can't eat another bite? It just totally turns you off? So if that's the case, is that what we're worried about? Or is it something less than that? Like Tosfos suggests, maybe there's different levels. That's something that we have to figure out. But it's also noteworthy that this seems to be different than Rashi and the Rashbam. And the Rashash notes this. And others wonder why they are deviating from what the Gemara seems to tell us. And in addition, trying to figure out the nature of this issue, is it Gezeira Drabbanan? Did the rabbis prohibit eating? So if so, that's also interesting, because if the whole purpose is Hiddur Mitzvah, so a Gezeira for Hiddur Mitzvah is a Chiddush. Where do you find that Hiddur Mitzvah is not only advocated and maybe even required, but will even enforce a prohibition in order to protect it? That's unusual. And that also maybe suggests there's a different issue here. But even if you want to say that it's about the Achila Gasa concern, that it's about that we're really afraid the mitzvah is going to get lost, so even that, why should we make a gezeira if we agree with the view of the Prima Gadim that in general the rabbis only made gezeiras for prohibitions based on the pasuk Ushmartem es Mishmarti, and Mishmeris is a language and a prohibition, so then why would they make a prohibition to cover a mitzvah? Why would they make a gezeira to cover a positive mitzvah rather than a prohibition? That's very unusual. And in fact, Rav Kook wrote in his comments that are collected on the Masechta that he disagrees with the Prima Gadim, and that this is the proof that you see from here that Chazal made gezeros even on positive mitzvahs. But either way, it's surprising. So the whole idea that Chazal are taking action here is noteworthy, because either it's a mitzvah saseh or it's a hiddur, even not even a mitzvah saseh, and all of that to be a seemingly rare example of a gezeira for that kind of purpose is noteworthy. Okay, so far so good. Everyone with me? Okay, so what can we try to understand more about some of these issues? So one point to consider is that same Gemara in Kuf Zayin Amud Beis, which we looked at, where the Gemara mentions that idea about Achila Gasa. So the Gemara also tells us that Rava would drink a lot of wine on Erev Pesach. Why? So that it would be an appetizer for him, so that he would be able to have more matzah. That's what it sounds like. And his appetite for matzah would be increased. So what's the point of that? What's the best? Why is there a motive to do that? Do you find that by other things, Ari? Okay, so it sounds on the surface like it's a parallel to that idea. Like, it's really not about the eating or the not eating. It's about the appetite and the enthusiasm that you'll have towards the matzah. So if making yourself hungry is going to do it, if encouraging your appetite is going to do it, either way, two opposite kind of things, but they're all going towards the same goal. So maybe this is the flip side of that. What's also interesting, and we'll have to expand on this a little bit, is that a number of Achronim understood from that behavior that there's some kind of value in not just eating the matzah that you're supposed to eat, and that's a loaded topic. How much matzah are you supposed to eat? We're not up to that yet, but that's something that takes up a lot of attention before Pesach, figuring out exactly what is the kezayis, how many kezayisim, etc. That's not our topic today, but let's assume that you knew how many ounces, how many grams of matzah would get you to basic fulfillment. Is there any value to having more? If somebody were to say, I'm going to have twice as much matzah as I need to have, according to all the days, like the most machmir opinion of how much matzah I need to have, and I'm going to have double that. Is there any value to that? What would you think?
What? Is it about the quantity or is it about the quality? Like maybe when you don't eat, it makes the taste better.
So if that's what we're focusing on, this detail in the Mishnah is telling us not to eat, so maybe that might be true. Right, even matzah could end up tasting good when you don't eat. I don't mean to display a bias against matzah. It's a wonderful mitzvah. But let's say we do talk of quantity. Is there an issue of quantity? Is there any value to increasing just the quantity?
Looks like maybe.
So what would it come from?
Making a pseudo.
So you mean so that's the interesting angle also. So they're saying, so as far as the dinim of Sudas Yontif, or is it a Pesach mitzvah specifically, or is it a Yontif mitzvah?
Well, you can't have bread, so the matzah becomes the bread, so you need to make, and like, it's all about being like, having a Suda and being Sameach with it, so whoever makes you Sameach with it.
Okay, see, that is a very fascinating area to explore. I wonder if that's what's being referenced in this Gemara. Now, it's true that we have a chi of Suda because of Yontif, and that obligation should direct us to eat a certain amount of bread in the form of matzah. But, and that may in fact also affect how many kezesim you have to have and how many matzahs you have to have, because maybe we're trying to accomplish two separate goals. But it would be interesting if that's really what that Gemara is getting at. Is that because did he do this also on Erev Sukkos? And did he do this also on Erev Shavuos? So it seems like it's something Pesach Matzah related. But the idea that it should extend to having more matzah, quantitatively specifically, is a view a number of Achronim took. It's hard to understand on the surface why. What's the value of just doing the mitzvah again, essentially, once you've already accomplished, according to all opinions, everything that you could have accomplished? Zach?
I think maybe a point that might be more Pesach specific, that the Rambam says, he talks about like chibur of the mitzvah of matzah, and we already see that there's an idea of hither. And so there's clearly some sort of value, specifically by matzah, showing this kind of enthusiasm, like, oh, and even more of it, like, showing you love it even more.
So that's something we very much have to explore. And we have to also consider that question. We have to look at that Rambam more closely together in a few minutes. The question is that point in the Rambam a Pesach-specific point or not? And it's a little bit of an open question. But it might be one way, it might be the other way, it might be them equally. So let's keep that question alive also. What exactly to do with that statement in the Rambam? Okay, so this is also interesting. This idea that there's some kind of value in working to increase your appetite for matzah. And does it lead us to the conclusion that you should have more than you otherwise need to? Some thought yes. And why that would be is something we also need to try to put into our bag of things to figure out. Now, we also know that there is an additional, more absolute prohibition on Erev Pesach related to eating. And what is that? Related to matzah. Right, so this Tosfos introduces on our daf, trying to figure out what is the Mishnah referring to. Because if the Mishnah says there's an issue, you shouldn't eat something in the afternoon, so Tosfos says, well, if you're talking about matzah, so matzah is an issue in and of itself, presumably all day, although that's something we'll have to clarify. And Tosfos brings this din from the Yerushalmi. So if you got a chance to see the Yerushalmi inside, it was also on our list. So the Yerushalmi has this very strange seeming comparison that there is a prohibition of eating matzah on Erev Pesach, and that it's compared to Bo'ol Arusasa Bebeis Chamav, somebody who's with his betrothed in the father-in-law's house before they're fully married, before they're Nisuin. So that is somehow comparable to eating matzah on Erev Pesach. So what exactly is that comparison trying to tell us is itself interesting, and that's something I don't know if we'll get to today, but I want to soon try to explore that a little bit. But setting aside for now that comparison and its message, but okay, there's a prohibition of eating matzah on Erev Pesach. So Tosfos has to try to figure out, if we already know that, and that's covering maybe the whole day, well, we have to see. So then what's the Mishnah here talking about? And saying, by the way, in the afternoon, you shouldn't eat also. So one question we'll also add to our growing list is, what's the purpose of the prohibition of eating matzah on Erev Pesach? Is it the same purpose as this general idea of not eating on Erev Pesach that our Mishnah is talking about? Right. It's not in our Mishnah, right? Our Mishnah doesn't say explicitly that there is an issue about matzah. In the Yerushalmi, it comes right after our Mishnah. But it's not enough for our Mishnah to tell us this. So is it a different din? Is it a related din? Why is it that you can't eat matzah on Erev Pesach? All right?
So the more matzah you're eating, the more you're able to see yourself as leaving Egypt. But if you were to, you know, start the play before the play starts, you know, that's a chisaron. So eating matzah before the Seder, that's problematic because you're kind of like jumping the gun on imagining yourself as leaving Egypt, which happens exactly at Seder time.
So that's got a lot of important themes to explore, and that also could touch upon the comparison of Bo'ol Arusasa Beis Chamav. But so therefore, if that's the theme, so does that, so you're saying it's distinct from the Isser of eating. Now, should clarify that for sure they have different parameters, right, which is what Tosfos' whole premise is, that there's got to be different details, but it's still possible they're trying to accomplish the same thing. That, so for example, you could have said that if the idea is to preserve our appetite for matzah and our enthusiasm for eating matzah, so it could be that, so matzah itself you can't eat all day. And as we get closer to the Seder, then start cutting off all food or all significant food. But it's all for the same purpose. Could be. And maybe not. So whether or not this is connected is also something to think about. Now, what's also of interest is that Tosfos suggests a point which is disputed, and we'll talk about this more in the near future, that maybe there is some kind of twilight zone matzah. Maybe there's some kind of in-between parv matzah, basically, that is nishtahein and nishtaher. It's not chametz, right? Because in that zone already you have a prohibition of eating chametz. But if you also have a prohibition of eating matzah, so what's left for people who are not on the keto and they're not avoiding all carbs? So if you can't have matzah and you can't have chametz, so what is zman shloyom v'lo laila? What exists in that middle space? So Tosis suggests, and this is a debated point lahalacha, that maybe egg matzah, that matzah shira is going to be in the exception category. Now here, just to enhance our synergy even more, just because the synergy keeps coming this year, so this is relevant all the time, but it's more relevant this year than it is any other year, and than it has been in about 13 years, right? Because this particular prohibition of eating on Erev Pesach, and eating certainly things that seem to be in the bread family on Erev Pesach, is going to pose a challenge for us in particular this year, because it's Erev Pesach Shechalios B'Shabbos. So the question of how do you get Shal Shudasin, and it's even a challenge, how do you get luncheon, because the Isser Chametz is pretty early in the day. So to get not one, but two meals in by a pretty early time in the day on that Shabbos is going to be a halachic challenge, topic of much discussion. So some of the suggestions are going to revolve around this position in Tosfos, that there is a exception that might be acceptable. Now, what kind of a statement would that be if we say you're not allowed to have matzah, but egg matzah, yes? So what's the logic to that? What's the logic to excluding any kind of matzah from this prohibition? So, yeah, Ari?
It's about reenacting the exodus from Egypt. You know, the exodus from Egypt happened with normal matzah. You know, if you're using egg matzah, well, that's like a runoff brand, so it's not a chisaron in, like, jumping the gun on the reenactment ceremony.
So what differentiates it? Is it the taste? Is it specifically its connection to the mitzvah? That are we only going to prohibit that which you can fulfill the mitzvah with? What if you have, let's say, matzah of non-Jews that has the exact same taste as matzah, but not something you're going to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah with? Zach?
And one of the questions is like chametz and matzah, and if you're eating matzah on Erev, like even if it's a fake matzah, like if you're a kid, you don't really know the difference, so you're just kind of gonna get thrown off, and it's kind of ruined like the whole point of the Seder, which is like getting the kids to ask questions about like why we're doing this and that, and if it looks too similar, then it takes away from that.
Okay, so that's actually a great segue. So bringing in the issue of the kids and what they understand is actually very much to the point. Right, so you saw the language of the Rama about kids and the issur of eating on Erev Pesach. Right, so that's actually very relevant. What does the Rama say? Right, that in defining this issue of eating on Erev Pesach, so where do kids fit in? So we know there's an issue of chinuch, right? That in general, we train children less than bar and bas mitzvah that they should observe halachos even though they're not grown up yet. But what age do we start? So it all depends on how they connect, how much they understand that specific din. So what standard does the Rama use in this case? What does he have to understand in order to be subject to this prohibition? Yeah, Ellie? or they have to be able to relate to it, to understand it. So isn't that an interesting focus? Right, because normally we define these mitzvos or averos for the purposes of chinuch based on how they relate to that din. But here, is that the same mitzvah? So to focus on the Haggadah as the standard? So what the Ramah seems to be suggesting is that this din of abstaining on Erev Pesach is somehow connected not just to matzah, but specifically matzah as connects to that mitzvah of Haggadah. Somehow these are related concepts. And that the purpose of avoiding this eating before Pesach is to enhance not only the mitzvah of matzah, but the mitzvah of matzah as it connects to the goal of Haggadah. Which is certainly an interesting thing to think about. Now, with that, let's consider the Rambam. So, the Rambam, as Zach brought in before, so when the Rambam talks about matzah specifically in Erev Pesach, how does he explain the issue? Now, what's the Rambam's reasoning for not having matzah in Erev Pesach? So I'll read you the first line, and I'm not going to read the rest yet, because we'll come back to the rest, it's significant. But just to look at the first line in the Rambam, this is in Parag Vav Halacha Yibbeis. So, Asru Chachamim Lechol Matzah Barav Pesach, Kidei Sheyehe Heker L'Achilasa Ba'erev. V'mishachol Matzah Barav Pesach Makanas O'Makas Maris Hachitei Tzenavs. Okay, so how does he explain the prohibition of eating matzah on Erev Pesach? We need to create a heker. That there needs to be some dividing line between whatever you do before and the mitzvah of matzah that's done for mitzvah purposes. So any non-mitzvah matzah eating needs to have a buffer zone. What does this remind you of? Where else do you find this din? In practice of creating a buffer zone between a mitzvah and something that comes before it that's not a full mitzvah? Zach?
Shofar.
Shofar, right? It seems to be a very similar idea. Right? There, it's different levels, but shofar and matzah parallel each other. So we have a mitzvah of shofar and Rosh Hashanah. And for a month before, we're blowing shofar as a minug. And yet, on Erev Rosh Hashanah, so we pause from that in order to allow the mitzvah to be standalone. In order to allow the mitzvah to be there on its own two feet and be recognized as such. So that's an interesting kind of idea. So here he's not focusing on te'avon or on the appetite for the matzah or creating a longing for it, but just we need to underline the matzah's status as matzah's mitzvah. And what we also see from the Ramah is that this connects as well to the Haggadah. So if you put the Rambam and the Ramah together, what you have is that abstaining from matzah on Erev Pesach is to underline the importance and the role of matzah at the Seder as a mitzvah, and B, a mitzvah that interlocks with the mitzvah of Haggadah, with the relating of Yetzias Mitzrayim. So that's a very interesting idea. There's a discussion about this. There's a fine Talmud Chacham who I'm privileged to know. His name is Rabbi Shlomo Sinneman, who's a Rabbi in Tar Vidas. So he happens to have a Sefer on Psachim, so we may refer to him again. But he also recently came out with a Sefer on Sefer Vayikra. And Sefer in Vayikra, he talks about this. But he also has a Sefer on Avraham Psachim, so be prepared to hear his name more than once. But Rabbi Sinneman notes that perhaps it makes sense that the idea of lechem oni, of feeling specifically that it's not just matzah, but it's matzah that has the status of lechem oni, and Chazal drew the connection that oni is contrasted with ashira, is poverty, is bread that is a bread of affliction, like we say in English, but also that ties into the mitzvah of Haggadah, lechem she'onim alav dvarim harbe. So that appreciation for lechem oni is something that we need to preserve. So that might mean, the view of Tosfos, that if it's not lechem oni, so then that doesn't enter into our issue here. And that egg matzah may not be a concern. And that we're trying to highlight the lechem oni's role in the Seder. And that that highlighting is specifically relevant to those who understand its involvement with Haggadah. So, along those lines, the idea of developing an appetite for the matzah, it could be, as he alludes to, that this also is a part of the lechem oni experience. And the idea that this is something that you should feel a need for, right, that you should feel a greater taiva for, that could be a halacha in lechem oni. And that maybe these dinim are related. So if that's the case, I could also maybe suggest that the two different views that we saw in the Rishonim, whether the din of not eating is because of Teavon or because of Achila Gasa, and Achila Gasa was the one that's supported by the Gemara, maybe they're not really two different views, even though clearly some of the Rishonim, like Rebbeinu David, clearly brought it as two different views. But that prompts the question of why Rashi and the Rashbam deviated from what seems to be explicit Gemara. So maybe it's possible that they all are the same idea. That being hungry for the food in general, having teavon for the matzah, so that increases the feeling of lechem oni. And so too would achila gasa, it's not just a question of whether it's called achila or not. If technically, okay, you require achila, and if you're so full that you can't eat another bite, it's not called achila. But maybe it's something more than that. That it's not that we're worried it's not going to be considered achila. It's that how could that be called lechem oni if you're so full that you're not interested in eating? So then that is perhaps a lack in the lechem oni aspect. And especially according to Tosfos on Kuf Zayin Amud Beis that we noted yesterday, that said that Achila Gasa has two different types. And so there's one kind of Achila Gasa that you just can't eat another bite, that revolts you to think of eating anything more. And there's also a lesser level of Achila Gasa. It's not that you're exploding, but it's that you're just not interested in eating more. You're not going to have the same kind of enjoyment because you're basically full. So if you take that second, lower level, so what's the issue? It's not that we're concerned you're not going to fulfill the mitzvah. It's that the aspect of lechem oni that is a part of the whole theme, that is a contradiction to achila gasa. Achila gasa, essentially, even the lesser level of achila gasa, is fundamentally at odds with the lechem oni aspect. Everything makes sense so far? Everybody with me? So far, so good? Okay, so, Zach, you have a question?
I just wanted to clarify idea is that since lechem oni is like bread of poverty and affliction, so we kind of feel like hungry, like a poor person would be.
I think that that might be the idea here a little bit. Yeah, that you should feel that this is something that you need, that this is the bread that sustains you. So that aspect is a lot more to say about, but and the maybe we'll also integrate this a little bit into tomorrow's parsha discussion. There's a lot to say about that. We got a lot on our plate here. It's a big Seder table with a lot on the plate. So this idea that we're trying to preserve the lechem oni, so perhaps that connects both the ideas that we want to have an appetite, and we certainly don't want to be even close to achila gasa, even the lower level of achila gasa that Tosfos talks about, where, yeah, we could eat, but it's just not what we're interested in as much. That perhaps taps into this same point. Now, there could be another aspect here. And maybe it all connects. It's not a radically different aspect, but it's just an added element. That maybe it's really the theme of our whole Mishnah. And you know, connected to what Ari's been saying about a play, about a show. So there is a lot of that theme in the Mishnah. Haseba will be a topic that will be on the horizon very soon. And the idea of Dalet Kosos, which are Dinder Abanan, inspired by last week's Parsha, is the note they sent to before last Shabbos. But what's conveyed there is the notion of Persumenisa, right? The idea, the Dalet Kosos are there in order to accomplish Persumenisa, we want to publicize the miracle. And Persumenisa, as we look towards Purim, is the major theme of that occasion. And the mitzvos of Persumenisa, including the Dalet Kosos, are generally Drabanan, generally not mitzvos min HaTorah, Purim and Chanukah, the whole days are Drabanan. The notion of Persumenisa in Chanukah candles and reading the Megillah and the Dalet Kosos, these are institutions made Rabbanim. But they are perhaps rooted in an attitude min HaTorah, as in general we say that the rabbis made their enactments in order to echo themes from the Torah itself. So here the Seder and the mitzvos that surround it are really the example on a level min HaTorah of something akin to Persumenisa, something there for the purposes of advertising a miracle and publicizing our salvation. So that's the theme of the Seder and the Matzah. So that's important, but it also has an aspect of Chiddush to it. And it goes to what Zachary was saying before about the idea of the Suda. And this also connects us to our first parak limudim. And those who weren't with us for the first parak, so just tap into what I'm referring to. So we learned the first parak, so we talked about the issues of chametz and the whole aversion that we have to chametz in general, and what's that about, and what are the themes and the imageries of chametz. And what we saw is that chametz is compared to avodah zarah in some places, it's compared to the yetzer hara, that there seems to be a general anti-chametz view within Chazal, within the commentaries, and that therefore the prohibition of eating chametz might be a anti-chametz prohibition. So why should it be only on Pesach? Why don't we prohibit chametz all year round? So we saw that last semester that the Radbaz says really we should have said chametz is asur all year round. We suggest a little bit differently that chametz, if it represents the Yetzer Hara, here we're going to connect to the Parsha in a very powerful way now, that if chametz represents the Yetzer Hara, it represents basically the loss of discipline, of just letting your Yetzer Hara have control, letting something leaven without watching it carefully. So yes, that's an issue for your whole life, but especially it's an issue for Pesach, because if Pesach is when we focus on our chayrus, we focus on our liberation, so it's all the more important that we take hold of our freedom and make it productive and not make it just a lack of discipline. So maybe all year round chametz has an issue, but especially Pesach time, chametz has an issue. So that leads us with a question. The fact that we eat matzah on Pesach, is it just because we're trying to diss the chametz, so to speak, right? We're trying to show our disdain for chametz? Or is it because there's something positive about matzah? As we read in this week's parasha, that the matzah was a part of the experience of running away from Mitzrayim and represented the fact that we didn't have time to let the bread rise. So what is matzah? Is matzah just the non-chametz? Or is it something of positive value? Is it something that connects us positively to this experience of salvation? And that's why we have it. Sam? Oh, okay. Well, not 100%. I think you're on the right track. But, I mean, you could say that, no, if I ate a carrot, maybe if I want to make a statement against chametz, I need to eat matzah. Because the carrot doesn't say, maybe I'm just, again, I'm back on a keto diet, or I'm on Atkins, I'm against carbs. So, well, carbs, you know, whatever. But carrots wouldn't count either. But whatever it is that I'm, I don't want to have gluten or flour. So it doesn't say anything about chametz. But matzah will say something about chametz. So perhaps what one of the major messages of this Mishnah is, all the dinim in the Mishnah, but this one that starts it off, is that don't think that matzah is just the anti-chametz. Right? Don't think that we're just having matzah either to show that we are not on Atkins, but we're still not eating chametz. Or parallel to that, like Zachary said before, look, it's Yontif. We have to have a suda. We need to wash and bench. But we can't have chametz, so okay, we're going to have matzah because we're having a suda's Yontif. But maybe it's equal to the challah that you'll have on Sukkot and the challah you'll have on Shavuos. It's just the Pesach-friendly version of challah. So if that were the case, you wouldn't really have the dinim that surround our Mishnah, the dinim that are in our Mishnah or that are commented around the Mishnah. The idea that we need to preserve our appetite and that we should try to have appetizers and that we should, maybe even according to those Achronim, have more matzah than we necessarily have to have. All of these ideas are all painting a picture that highlight to us that matzah is not just not chametz. That matzah is inherently valuable. And that matzah has its own chashivas. And that's especially important because you could have come to the other conclusion. You could have thought that it's just there either to be non-chametz or to provide you for a suda at a time when you can't have chametz. So all of these dinim are supporting the theme that matzah has its own chashivas to it. And maybe that's an important message that the parak needs to tell us, especially before it gives us any other dinim of what is involved in the Seder and how this story is going to be conveyed. So the role of matzah in that story is an important premise to lay down at the very, very beginning of the Mishnah. And that could perhaps answer our question also of why make a gzera, so whether it's acceptable or not, but it's clearly unusual to have a gzera for a mitzvah saseh, and especially if it's only the hiddur of the mitzvah saseh. So, but maybe that's the point, that there was a greater need here than there would be by other mitzvahs. You don't need a gzeira for a lulav or for a shofar because we understand what they're doing. But here, when it comes to matzah, there's the possibility that we may not fully appreciate that matzah has its own significance. Now, it's still a somewhat circular significance, and we'll talk about that a little bit tomorrow in the Parsha connection, but it's interesting in of itself, but the idea that there is a persume nisa, storytelling value to the matzah, all of that has to be emphasized. So far, so good? Everybody with me? So, it's also interesting, the Kudjugal of Arav, if you're familiar with that name, if you're not, you go to the fifth floor of the library and get off the elevator and look to your right, there's a picture of him on the wall. The Kudjugal of Arav was a student also of the Avnei Nezer we mentioned yesterday, the Avnei Nezer and his students, and we'll probably mention him again today, but the Sachet Shavar Rebbe and another student, the Kudjugal of Arav. So the Sachet Shavar has in one of his Svarim that matzah also has a unique din, or really all of the Seder night mitzvahs have a somewhat unique, have an unusual din, that there is a machlokes overall, whether we say mitzvah srichas kavana. Do we require intent to fulfill mitzvahs? Do we need to know that we're doing a mitzvah? So that's actually a sugya in this parak, and God willing, it's one of the shas sugyas in this parak. We'll hopefully be able to explore that topic in a little more detail when we get to it also. But the general idea of mitzvah srichas kavana is separate from a specific din that you find in Sukkah. The Bach in Hilchos Sukkah suggests that there's an extra requirement of awareness in Kavana for Sukkah, because the Pasuk in Parshas Amor says that we have that mitzvah, L'man yedu darosechem ki besukkah soshavti es b'nei Yisrael, that we should know for all the generations that God protected us in Sukkos in Mitzrayim. Well, on the way out of Mitzrayim, the Midbar. So that, says the Bach, why does that, brought the Torah brings that in the beginning of Hilchos Sukkos. So the Bach says, why is it there? What's the relevance to Halacha? Relevance to Halacha is you have to know what that mitzvah is about in order to fulfill its value in HaTorah. That's separate from the general question by mitzvahs overall, do they require kavana? Sukkah requires special attention for that purpose. So says the Kodesh Glover, we have a connection between Sukkot and Pesach, which is also an interesting topic to explore. They both happen on the 15th of Nisan, or 15th of their respective months. Pesach, 15th of Nisan, Sukkot, 15th of Tishrei. So the unusual kind of Gzeir Shava, the Gemara says, that creates a kind of a wormhole portal between the two of them, and there's a transfer of concepts between Pesach and Sukkot, and so most prominently it means that we have an obligation of a Suda on the first night of Pesach, just like you have an obligation to eat in the Sukkah the first night of Sukkot. So the Kodesh Glover says maybe this din transfers also, that maybe just like the Bach says, when it comes to Sukkot, you have to have special awareness of being in the Sukkah. So too, Pesach night, you have to have awareness of being in fulfillment of the idea of eating matzah. So to say that this mitzvah specifically requires kavana is more than mitzvahs in general, also perhaps brings us in to this notion of the chashivas of matzah in a little bit of a more powerful way. All right? Everything makes sense so far? Okay, so now, with that, let's go back to the Rambam. So we referred to the Rambam before as talking about Hecker, but Zach mentioned also that he talks about chavivas. And what's interesting is those ideas are not only two separate ideas, probably, but if you read the Rambam in its totality, you could maybe find three dinim here. Maybe they're three separate dinim. Okay, so listen carefully. If you have it in front of you, all the better. This is the Rambam in Perek Vav Halacha Yud Beis. And there's an interesting grammatical issue here, which also goes to the point that Zach mentioned before, maybe might very fundamentally go to it. So let's read the whole halacha together. It says, Asru chachamim lechol matzah b'erev Pesach shnei shi'ei heker l'achiloso b'erev. Mishachol matzah b'erev Pesach makros ha-makros mardes ad shtei shenafsho. Fine. V'chein asur lechol erev Pesach mikodem ha-mincha kimat kidei she'ikones l'achilas matzah b'taiva. Aval ochel humat peros o yirakos v'lo yimalo kreso mehen. V'chachamim harishonim hayu mariven atzman erev Pesach kidei leachol matzah b'taiva v'yiyu mitzvos chaviven olav. Aval b'shar arve yamim tovim ochel v'holeich ad shetechshach. So, what do you see there? How many different explanations and dinim do you see in that Rambam? Anyone want to take a shot at it? Zach, I think I see you starting to raise a hand. Oh, I see. Ari, thank you for putting it up here. Okay, and actually, it's interesting. Let's look at that. Okay, yeah, what Ari put up there is particularly interesting. So you think you're being helpful, you're being doubly helpful. So you see Ari put up in the chat, the text. There's a slight difference in what I just read to you and what is on that text, because I was reading from the Shapsi Frankel Rambam. Did anyone pick it up? There might be a very significant difference. Okay, so first of all, let's note that there are, if I move the cursor on this, can you see that, or is that just on my screen? Okay, you imagine you can see it. So, you can see in the chat, you see the Rambam here. So, there seems to be three points here. So, Asru chamim lechol matzah b'erev Pesach, kidei shi'ei heker l'achiloso. Okay, the heker idea that we mentioned before, that we need to have a buffer zone between any personal eating, any optional eating, and the actual mitzvah eating. So, heker is one idea. So, what does that cover? That covers the idea of no matzah on erev Pesach. So, matzah, that's for heker purposes. Where does taiva come in? So, it's an interesting synergy, because taiva is normally a bad thing. We normally speak out against taiva. But taiva is presented positively here in this sugya, and also of those who were with us for Chulin last year. So, you saw that the opening shirim in Chulin, we talked about how taiva is presented positively, and it sounds like it, at least in Parshas Re'eh, and in some of the sources in reference to Shechita, so in reference to eating meat in Shechita, so here, the synergy between last year and this year is the positive spin on taiva. So, here, this idea of taiva for matzah. So, here, what does he refer that to? Is that for the prohibition of eating matzah on Erev Pesach? No, it's for the second point. Even though they're all related, they're all in the same din, they're all here in the same halacha in the Rambam, so presumably they're not completely disconnected from each other, but they have different stages. So here, v'chein osur lechol erva pesach mikodem ha-mincha kemat kidei shikonis lachilas matzah v'taiva. So don't eat matzah on erev pesach for heker, and don't eat it all in the late afternoon, or don't eat a lot in the late afternoon, because of taiva. So it seems like these are two distinct purposes. Again, maybe related, but two distinct ideas. One, the heker for the mitzvah. And then also we want you, like the Rashi and the Rashbam. He doesn't use the language of Hiddur Mitzvah, but maybe it's basically like the language of Rashi and the Rashbam, that there should be taiva for the matzah, and that's got its own value to it. And the heker is really external, and the taiva is going to be internal. Now, here, are these two things or are there three things? Because the idea of chavivos, so that is mentioned here at the end. So is chavivos and taiva one din? He just mentions it twice. one idea? Or is that a third aspect of Chavivus? What do you think? So what's important to note, and some Svarim highlight this, that this idea that we want the Chavivus here, this is actually only introduced after there's another concept brought up. Right, what is that? So first, you're not allowed to eat matzah. Second, as we get closer, you shouldn't eat too much in general. Only have a little bit. Only have a little bit of fruits and vegetables. And then there's a third level. What's that? The Chachamim HaRishonim. This is not the din, the absolute din that our Mishnah is reflecting. It's telling us a new thing. There's also a higher aspirational madrega. There are people who are on a certain level. So they would go further. It's not just that they would stay away from matzah, then stay away from heavier eating later in the day, but they were ma'iv and atzman. They would make themselves hungry. They would starve themselves. So why is that? Yes, kidei lechol mitzvah matzah b'taiva, right? So that they should have more appetite for the matzah, true. But also an additional element they're building on top of it of chavivus. So that's possibly separate, an additional part that is being brought in by that. But what's also very interesting, and this goes to Zach's point from before, so this idea of chavivus, I keep leaving off the last word on purpose, so is that, like Zach was saying before, is that a general mitzvah attitude? Or is that all part of the matzah focus?
Seems like it depends on your
yourself. Okay. So, Jonathan, you noticed that? Right? So, if you look at what Ari very helpfully put up on our screen, right? So, what does it say here? Oh, yeah. You can't see that I'm highlighting it, but it's the last two words on the third line from the bottom. The way it's written out here, you get this from Sefaria? So, the way it comes from Sefaria, that you should do this in order that the matzos should be dear to you. So it sounds like it's all one thing. It's just an extension of the specific taiva that we want to have focused on the matzah. But in the Shapsi Frankel Rambam that I was reading to you, it doesn't have nekudos, but it has two vavs here. So it's clearly saying that you mitzvos chaviven alav. So that opens up a whole other angle here, which is also especially interesting. So is there another component here that's about the matzah? Or is it, no, it's a more general idea about mitzvos. And you could apply it to anything, but for whatever reason, we're talking about it now. So the idea that it is referenced here is interesting, even if it is a general concept. Now, here's something else interesting to pile up on top of that. So, we mentioned at the beginning that some Achronim maintain that the reason for this idea that Rava would provoke his appetite by drinking wine was in order to eat more matzah. Right, and we raised the question, is it talking quantitatively or qualitatively? But some Achronim did say that it's quantitative, that you have more matzah, there's a value to that. Sam, did you have a question?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Would the idea that, the Kirsa that says matzah, not mitzvos,
mm-hmm.
it would seem at least on the first glance that that might fit better with the overall Rambam.
It might, if we want to say this is all one idea about supporting the notion that the matzah's message should be emphasized. So we could understand where it's coming from.
Yeah, just because it seems like the rest seems to just be talking about
matzah. Right, so it's definitely a chiddush to introduce this new aspect to it. But it may still be true, or it may still have other indications, because, so we said before, that there are some achronim who maintain that there's an inyan to have quantitatively more matzah. Now, let's come back to that question. So, first of all, wasn't obvious to us, right? The idea that you should have enthusiasm towards the mitzvah that you have to have, the matzah that you have to have, okay, fine. But let's say if we cleared that hurdle for sure, you had, according to every possible machmir opinion, all the matzah you need to have. Is there a value to having more matzah? So, some achronim thought yes, and we said at the beginning today, it's not so obvious that that's true. So why would it be true? So maybe it'd be true because, again, we want to emphasize that matzah is inherently valuable. But if I just want to show that I'm anti-chametz, so okay, one matzah will do it. I don't need to have any more matzah. I've already made my statement. And if I want to have my sudas yantif, I had already. So to have more matzah, what does that accomplish? So maybe it accomplishes emphasizing its inherent value. Maybe it all contributes to the Haggadah, to the Prisuminisa. But maybe also it's broader than that. So here is very interesting, because among the handful of Achronim who maintain this opinion that there's an inyan to have more matzah, one of them is the Avnei Nezer, so to mention him yet again. So the Sacha Shavar Rebbe, the Avnei Nezer, in his tshuvas, he has a tshuva about this, but it's not about this. He talks about this. He's not talking about Pesach. And that's significant. He's talking about general issues, actually talking about shofar. And the whole issue of can you blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah beyond the mitzvah, because there's a potential, it's not a malacha itself, but something that is generally prohibited on Yantif to play instruments, it's prohibited midrabanan, so can you blow a shofar on Rosh Hashanah beyond the mitzvah? So, and that's significant, that it's not, the tshuva is not about Pesach. But he makes there a point that he thinks that there is an inyan when you have a mitzvah, there's an inyan to show your love for mitzvahs by doing it more. And that's an idea, for example, which he mentions there. You find it in Maseches Sukkah, that the Gemara says that the Chassidei Yerushalayim, they, even though to fulfill the mitzvah of Lulav, you just have to pick it up for a second and you're Yotze, but that the real Mahadrim, they would walk around with their Lulavim all day. Whatever they were doing, they'd have the Lulav with them. So why? They did the mitzvah already. What's the point in walking around with the Lulav all day? So he writes there that that's an aspect of Chavivas HaMitzvos, that you want to show that you love the mitzvah by being involved with it more. So then he says, what's the proof? Says Arvei Psachim, that this din, or this notion of Arava and of drinking more to get himself ready for drinking, for eating more matzah, what does that show you? He says, yes, it shows you there's an inyan to eat more matzah than you have to. But that's not really a Pesach din. It's a Kol Torah Kula din. It is something that, in general, when it comes to mitzvos, we should try to show our love for them by getting involved more than we have to. And he writes there that this is the opposite of another concept, or it's the inverse of another concept, that we have a notion, which also comes up in Hilchos Seder, and we'll make reference to it, that we could call it the anti-efficiency principle. We say, ein osin mitzvahs chavilos chavilos. We don't try to kill two birds with one stone. We don't do two mitzvahs in one shot. If we have that opportunity, we try to avoid it. We try to instead separate the mitzvahs and not have them all combined into one efficient opportunity. So why is that? So what's the reason for that principle? Rashi says, because it looks like the mitzvahs are a burden to you. That if you're trying to potter them off so easily, you're trying to get them fulfilled in a efficient manner as possible, it looks like, okay, you have a lot of tasks and you want to check off the boxes, but you're not really happy about it. So if that's a concern, so the inverse is, you want to show, not only am I happy about it, if I could, I'd be eating matzah all day. If I could, I'd be blowing shofar, taking a lulav all day. So it's a general chavivas hamitzvahs kind of idea. So the notion that there's also an added element here, maybe it's separate from what we've seen, but there's an added element of showing your love for mitzvos in general is itself a aspect of your attitude towards mitzvos. Now, with all that, I'm going to leave you with a challenge. So with all that, after we just spent the past few minutes saying it's a general idea, not necessarily a Pesach idea, maybe, we can bring it back into Pesach-specific language. Because maybe our goal of recreating Yetzias Mitzrayim actually incorporates a Chavivas HaMitzvah statement also. So, first of all, it's similar to the whole Chametz consideration. Because if we said before that we want to create the impression that while, yes, we are liberated and we're becoming free now, but that's not just free for Hefker purposes that we could just do whatever we want, but we are free with a purposeful sense that we can now maximize our potential. And we're going to transition from Avadim to Paro to Avadim to the Ribono Shel Olam. So it becomes an important message at the same time to say, not only are we happy to be free and to be without shackles, but we're in control and we're disciplined, so no chametz. And we mentioned in the first Zman, in the first parak, about the sugya of Zrizim Akdim and the Mitzvos, and the whole idea that's also baked in here, no pun intended, a machmisin es ha-mitzvos. Right, that whole notion of that being a part of what we're doing. So the idea that our control over time, we don't let things just expire, but we're on top of it. So that's also a part of the message. But the idea that we're not just running away from something, but we're running to something, is also a crucial part of the message. So yes, we're happy to be freed, but we're just as happy to have the mitzvos. So the idea that we are going to God's servitude, that we're going to Avdus Ribono Shel Olam, that should be emphasized at the same time. So Chavivas HaMitzvah becomes not just a Kol Torah Kula concept, but it becomes a Pesach concept also. Now, how can we prove that even more with some super synergy points? You ready for this that I will leave you with? So to say that this idea of Chavivas HaMitzvah is a part of the Yetzias Mitzrayim experience, it is a Rashi in this week's Parsha. It is a Rashi in Parsha's Bo. So your challenge between today and tomorrow, when we talk about the Parsha, is to find where Rashi is quoting Mechilta. Rashi didn't make it up, so again, it's from Chazal. It's a Mechilta building on a Pasuk in Parsha's Bo that ties the idea of Chavivas HaMitzvah specifically into our behavior at Yetzias Mitzrayim. And perhaps that also all transfers back. So keep an eye out for that tomorrow when we talk about the Parsha. So let's just quickly recap. So we spoke about the idea that the Gemara tells us that Rava used to drink a lot on Erev Pesach to get him more an appetite for wine, which could just mean that he's going to have a greater focus on it. But some Acharonim understood from there a idea of a value of having more matzah than you need to have, and we tried to figure out what that could be about. And then we talked about the fact there's a prohibition to eat matzah on Erev Pesach. It's expressed in the Yerushalmi with this comparison of Balar Sasub Beis Chamav. And Tosfos quotes it here, and we pose the question of whether these are related concepts, are they different concepts for different purposes, how exactly do they play out. And Tosfos takes the position that Matzah Shira is excluded from that, and that could be what we're talking about eating at that time or a year such as this where it's going to have a Shal Shudas issue. And we noted that the Ramah said that Ketanim only have this prohibition once they're holding an Yetzias Mitzrayim, which was an interesting focus. And then we saw that the Rambam said that the reason you have the prohibition of eating on Erev Pesach, eating matzah on Erev Pesach, is to have a heker. Sounds like it's evocative of not blowing shofar as a minig on Erev Rosh Hashanah. So it highlights the mitzvah role specifically of matzah. And we quoted from Rabbi Sinneman That perhaps is also to emphasize the Lechem Oni component, which all connects into this idea that the Ketanim and Yetzias Mitzrayim, that not only should be Heker, but Heker of Yetzias Mitzrayim, and the Heker of Lechem Oni of Yetzias Mitzrayim. And that perhaps the idea of having more taiva for the food is something that connects to the lechemoni idea. And then we suggested that maybe the view of achila gasa being the concern is not in contradiction to this, like the Rabbi David said, but maybe actually it is supportive of this idea, especially if you take Tosus's view that we're talking about a lower level of achila gasa, just you won't be so interested. So maybe that's all part and parcel. You want lechemoni, you want to be interested in it, you want to have a taiva for it, and you don't want to be so full that you're not focused on eating. And then we suggested that the idea of there being a gezeira here, which is unusual any way you look at it, so maybe it's because we could have thought chametz and matzah are just opposites, and chametz is bad, and eat matzah to not have chametz, or to make an anti-chametz statement maybe. But there's no actual value to the matzah itself. So all of these dinim and every dinim in the Mishnah support the idea that matzah is inherently valuable. It's not just not chametz, but that there is a value to eating matzah. And we noted also that the Kadosh Glover said, based on the connection to Sukkos, that even if we say mitzvahs in general don't require kavanah, when it comes to matzah, we have to have awareness of what we're doing. And then we saw that the Rambam has really what seems like three stages here, that he talks about heker for eating matzah on Erev Pesach, talked about taiva for not eating other stuff too much close to the beginning of Pesach, and then he also talks about chavivas, which sounds like it's the same, but maybe that's talking about the more intense idea of really starving yourself, Erev Pesach, as the Hasidim Rishonim would do. And we noted that that could either be a Kol HaTorah Kula idea, or it could be a matzah-specific idea, and that it could be a little bit of a girsa question, because the Sefaria girsa over here has matzos should be chavivas alav, but the Shapsi Frankel has the language of mitzvos chavivas alav, and we saw that the Avnei Nezer, when he takes the position that you should have more matzah if you can, he's not saying that in a Pesach-specific way. He's saying that that din is because, in general, to show that you like mitzvos, you should blow shofar more often, you should take lulav more often, and you should eat more matzah. All of that is the idea of showing greater love for mitzvos overall. So it sounds like it is a general Kol HaTorah Kula idea, but then we plugged it back in to Pesach and we said that no, maybe it is a specific Pesach idea because the Cheirus of Yetzias Mitzrayim is only valuable in conjunction with going towards the mitzvos, so showing the chavivas ha-mitzvos, we're not just lazy, but we are happy to be freed because we are focused, we're happy to be able to look towards mitzvos as a whole, so that is something that is integrated into the Yetzias Mitzrayim message, as evident by the fact that the Mechilta that Rashi quotes in this week's Parsha points out where that is happening in the stage of Yetzias Mitzrayim itself, and that's where we will pick up from, God willing, tomorrow, and then also discuss themes of the second Aliyah of Parsha's Bo. So I wish you all a wonderful day. Should be only good things, and should stay safe and healthy. And we'll see you soon. Have a great day.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.